Good afternoon and welcome to this public hearing. I would like to call the public hearing to order and acknowledge that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. I have a few housekeeping notes for everyone that is here today. Washrooms are located in the lobby out through those doors on the left. The water fountain is also located out there, and there is some tea, coffee, and some refreshments there. We will take a 5-minute recess at the top of each hour to allow for personal breaks. And I would ask that you please turn your phones or electronics off. We have made this hearing as accessible as possible to ensure that the space and time is made for everyone who wishes to participate. In doing so, we are live streaming this hearing to YouTube. We have also set up an overflow space at the Best Western Hotel across the street from the municipal office, where the live stream is being played to ensure we have lots of space for those here in person. Our staff are here to help anyone who is here to listen and participate. Please see the registration desk if you need assistance with anything. We will break sometime between 6 or 6:30 and then return to council chambers to resume the public hearing promptly at 7 p.m. So this is a public hearing, at which time municipal council will receive verbal comments from citizens in attendance concerning the proposal to repeal the existing municipal planning strategy and replace it with the amended municipal planning strategy, which contains new sections of policies related to coastal protection and incorporates formatting, numbering, and accessibility changes, as well as the adoption of a new municipal-wide land use bylaw. Planning staff will present further details in terms of the specific changes that are being proposed. At this time, I will call each of the council members for the record, or I will ask them to identify, actually. If you would please state your name for the record, because you must be in attendance in order to vote.
Letha Haysom, District 1.
Councillor Martin Bell, District 2.
Councillor Wendy Oiko, District 3.
Councillor Pam Hubley, District 4.
Councillor Kathy Moore, District 5.
Carolyn Bolivar-Getson, Mayor.
Sandra Statton, District 6.
Michelle Greek, District 7.
Casey DeLong, District 8.
Reed Warnett, District 9.
Chastity Vino, District 10.
Thank you. The agenda for today is as follows. A staff presentation on the proposed amendments, verbal presentations from the public, a review of next steps in the process, then I will declare the public hearing closed. As the chair, I have a responsibility of ensuring all members of council have the opportunity to ask questions and receive clarity, and for the public to provide opinions on matters before council. We are guided by Policy 001-Procedures of Council, which upholds the basic principles of Robert's Rules of Order for decorum. With that, I would ask that everyone not question the motives of council member or a member of the public, not treat anyone with disrespect, avoid unbecoming language, not willfully violate a rule of order. This will allow us to proceed respectfully. If any of the above-mentioned behavior becomes problematic, I will ask those individuals to leave the council chambers. I would now ask staff to make a brief presentation on the proposed amended municipal planning strategy and new municipal-wide land use bylaw addressing coastal protection regulations.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Reed Shepherd. I'm the manager of planning with the District of Lunenburg. I'm going to give a brief presentation with an overview of the proposed regulations. The presentation will include the project objectives, the process, overview of the engagement, overview of the regulations themselves, and touching on the next steps and recommendations. The project has been guided by two primary objectives, one being protecting the communities from the coast, and that's keeping human activity away from the risks caused by coastal erosion and flooding. The second being protecting the coastlines from humans, which is protecting largely focused on the sensitive ecosystems along the coastlines and human activity. Some of the recent events that have occurred relate to first reading, which occurred on May 14th, the notice of the public hearing was issued on May 15th, and that is when the regulations came into effect. Public information sessions were held. There were four: Riverport, Lahave, Big Tan, Cook Island, as well as an online session. That's all occurred in the past couple of weeks. Today, of course, is the public hearing. There was a considerable amount of public engagement that occurred last year. So this project began in April of 2023. But during the summer of 2023, there was a substantial public engagement process. There was a What We Heard report prepared from that. But the key takeaway elements from that were generally there was a high level of concern for the issues that relate to flooding, erosion, and ecosystems. There's a public desire for moderate to high level of regulations. There was support for different types of regulations to address those different issues. Of those issues, ecosystem protection was rated as the highest valued and the highest support for high regulations to protect it. Education and awareness was also highly desired. There was also a strong interest in widespread land use planning issues along the coastline, such as coastal access or RV parks as well. So what's being considered now are regulations to deal with flood risk, so to mitigate from that risk, to mitigate from the erosion risk, and to introduce regulations that help protect ecosystems and wetlands. The first set of regulations pertains to protection from coastal flooding. The primary regulation there is establishing a new elevation requirement for new habitable spaces in residential buildings. That would be established for new residential uses. This regulation would also prohibit new institutional uses outright. There are a series of exemptions and exemptions for non-habitable uses, such as other types of uses that aren't residential, as well as exemptions and allowances for additions to existing residential structures that are there today. The second set of regulations relates to coastal erosion. The primary piece of that is establishing horizontal setbacks. One of them contains a 30-meter erosion risk area and setback. Secondly, there is a requirement for a 15-meter vegetative buffer. There is an ability to reduce the 30-meter setback as long as it's supported by an erosion risk assessment that could reduce the building footprint down to a minimum of 15 meters. Again, there are exemptions for types of uses and structures that need to be close to the water, such as things that relate to marine uses. And there are allowances for additions to structures that may already be within that 30-meter area. Lastly, coastal wetlands. This is a set of regulations that's aimed at protecting wetlands through horizontal setbacks from the edge of wetlands. This involves a 30-meter horizontal setback that also must contain a vegetative buffer. There are also policies to support collaborating with environmental NGOs on wetland mapping and identification, as well as flexibility to recognize when the mapping is incorrect and allow residents to go through a simplified process to identify those issues. Lastly, the staff recommendation on this on these regulations is that Council do proceed to adopt the regulations that are in the form of the proposed amended municipal planning strategy and new municipal-wide land use bylaw. And the report that has been prepared contains motions that Council will be able to consider at second reading. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of clarification from Council at this time? At this time, I would ask Reed Shepherd, Manager of Planning Services, if there were any written submissions received by the municipality from the public on these amendments.
Yes, I can confirm that 19 pieces of written correspondence were received by staff. Those were circulated out to Council on June 12th, which was yesterday. They have also been posted on the municipal's website.
Thank you. If any verbal presentations are being made by the public to Council, and I know I do have a list here, I would like to ask all persons who wish to speak at the public hearing to note the following. Please sit at the table right here, please. State your name and your address. Direct all statements to the chair and limit your time to 5 minutes. A timer is on the laptop in front of you there. If you do not have a number and would like to speak, please see staff at the registration desk. If time permits, speakers may address council a second time, but they must wait until all other interested citizens have the opportunity to speak. I will now turn to members of the public who would like to address council on these amendments. You will be called in order of the number you were assigned upon registration. So our first speaker is Kimberly Landry. If you would please just, if you sit down, just state your name for the record, and if you could turn the mic on. I didn't say that, but I will say that. And just.
Hi. I got the short end of the straw. So Michael Harrison and my wife, Kimberly Landry. We live at 4591 Highway 332 on the LaHave River. Well, good afternoon. Thank you for holding this forum. My name is Michael Harrison, as I've said, and I'm here to address a group of concerned citizens, not just ourselves. Over the past week, we have circulated a petition and have had over 170 responses. People who have signed this petition urging council to include tidal rivers in Lunenburg County protection area measures. This is not just a request, it's a call to action to rectify a significant oversight. Tidal rivers such as the LaHave Estuary, Petite Riviere, Martins River are currently excluded from the proposed coastal protection regulations. The exclusion disregards scientific data and evidence, and these areas are at risk of coastal flooding and erosion. The geographical boundaries currently set at the mouths of these rivers is not aligned with the recommendations from the MODL staff, which is highlighted in these areas as, which have highlighted these areas as vulnerable. It is both irresponsible and neglectful for council to ignore the clear scientific provincial mapping data included in these significant threats to the shorelines and the private properties along these tidal rivers. We request immediate action to rectify this omission. If council has any specific evidence or rationale justifying for the exclusion of these areas, we request that it be made public. In the absence of such evidence, we strongly urge council to reconsider the current regulations and include protections for these vulnerable areas as originally proposed. We believe that we'd be prudent in the interim for council to put a pause on any development permits in affected areas until this oversight can be rectified. The Climate Atlantic report on climate action, responsibility and liability for municipalities states, and I quote, municipalities cannot simply ignore problems that are staring them in the face. Burying one's head in the sand is not a rationale or good faith response to a problem and is not a prudent approach within the legal framework, unquote. By not heeding to this creates a potential liability to council and the Lunenburg County, as you are fully aware of this and the risks. This report underscores the risks associated with knowingly disregarding the coastal flood risk for tidal rivers. Numerous experts have identified these rivers as susceptible to coastal flooding. Such disregard is neither rational nor indicative of acting in good faith on behalf of the residents residing in these areas. The mandate of this project, as defined by MODL's Coastal Protection website, is to protect our communities from coastal risks and to protect our sensitive coastal ecosystems from human impact. It is imperative that these regulations encompass the rivers up to the point where they are no longer considered coastal. As an example, the Lehave River estuary, for instance, is part of the Atlantic Ocean up until Bridgewater and should be regarded as a segment of Nova Scotia coastline. During the council meeting on June 4th, the exclusion of these tidal rivers was justified by stating only coastlines were included in the regulations. However, scientific mapping and data clearly show that these rivers are part of our coastline and face the same risks. Ignoring this data puts our communities and environment at risk.
There's 35 seconds.
I appreciate your time. Thanks. We've provided council with backup information, copies of the petition.
Oh, we still had another half a minute, but...
Okay. So we also have copies of data if anybody from the public would like to have one. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Peter Bars. Could you put your mic on, please?
Complicated technology. I'm Peter Barris. I live in Lehave, West Dublin, actually. And in full disclosure, I belong to a group that's urging the province to proclaim the Coastal Protection Act. That act is written. It's stored somewhere in a closet, but it's all it needs to do is to be proclaimed, and the province will assume the responsibility for coastal protection, helping municipalities. We're facing rising sea levels. All you have to do is take a walk on Crescent Beach or Rissus Beach to see the effect, and you don't have to observe it. The science is there, too. There are rising sea levels, and in addition to that, the coast and the wetland in many places is being abused by people who want to build too close to it and build the wrong kind of barrier and change ocean currents and so on and so forth. So the coast is in serious, serious trouble. There are 49 municipalities, and for the province to offload the responsibility for shoreline protection to those 49 municipalities is, you know, divide and conquer, and it's just a mishmash of policies and problems. So I really appreciate what this council is doing. And I also know that by instituting setbacks and so on, you are facing complex and difficult problems. If I had land that I wanted to build on for my retirement or whatever, and you said it's the wrong place to build, that's a problem. But those problems follow the main problem, and the main problem is doing something to save our wetlands and mitigate changes along the coast. I was involved in saving the Owl's Head Provincial Park. It was a long 2.5-year battle, and I kept asking myself, why do we keep having to fight these problems where the solutions just seem so clear and obvious? And one of the questions that I raised during that issue was, if I had a lot of money and if I owned shoreline property, would I build something that might flood in the next 50 years? And the answer is, I don't know. I might. I hope that I wouldn't, but I might. And I think that what the Coastal Protection Act should do and what you people are trying to do is providing an umbrella organization that, or policy, set of policies that serves the better good, that serves everybody, and overrides self-interest. That's about all I have to say. I hadn't planned to say anything when I came, but I can't keep my mouth shut. Thank you very much, and thank you for what you're doing. I realize that it's difficult, but it really is important to look at governance for everybody, and that means dealing with problems that are created out of self-interest by people who want to basically do the wrong thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Denise Forand.
Forand. All right. Forand, Francais, me. English is good. Hello, I'm Denise Forand, and from Martin's Point. So I'm out of your district, I believe, but I also do know the Department of Natural Resources, and those people all actually work in your district because they've come out and checked out stuff. But I'm here to say I've been fighting to save my beach, and I'm questioning why the Beaches Act is not followed, because why does somebody have the right to come in and take a dirt road, build three-tier boulder walls to block everybody else's deeded access in our deeds, states that we have access, yet the only way we can protect ourselves is to take those people to court, because the acts, the Beaches Acts, any of our environmental acts are not done. So I think I'm just getting extremely frustrated because I've been at this for over 10 years. And I don't understand why people can build, you know, a half a mile road side on all the way to the ocean through a marsh and then leave oil residue in the marsh. I just boggles my brain what the government permits. You know, they say, no, we let him, he can put a pipe in to feed the marsh. Well, all I do know is every time I walk by, you know, tide permitting, because I can only walk it at low tide, I do a dance that, you know, and I'm so thankful when I see seaweed after a storm in front of his house that was built in the lowland, because government is issuing permits to where they do not belong. And I just don't know. Your MLAs can't help you. You know, your counselors can't help you. The Department of Environment, Natural Resources, Oceans and Water. Nobody can do anything to protect our land. And it's our land because Canada has a, you know, where to draw the high water mark. And it's an important boundary. You know, the crown ownership, the private ownership, where it falls. Yet they don't seem to be able to recognize what a high water means. The precise location of high water mark is a mark of fact and evidence in Nova Scotia. The high water mark is defined in the Land Surveyors Regulation 4, blah, 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 all that stuff. Ordinary high water mark means the limit or edge of a body of water where the land has been covered by water so long as to arrest it from vegetation as to mark a distinct character upon vegetation where it extends into the water or upon the soil itself. That's in our act. I don't know why the people that work for my tax dollars, our tax dollars, I don't know why they can't read the same script. You know, whether or not foreshore is owned by a provincial crown or the adjacent landowner, it's complicated by legislation such as the Beaches Act. which state that the beaches of Nova Scotia are dedicated in perpetuity for the benefit, education, enjoyment of present and future generations of Nova Scotia. The Act defines beach as. So it's very well described in our rules. I have a really hard time understanding why you, that have ears to these government people, why these rules are not followed. It breaks my heart and many others here that you go down and for 50, 70 years, it's always been a natural state and somebody comes in with more money than brains and does whatever they want because they will pay the fines, baby. They will pay the fines. Is my time up?
35 seconds.
Oh, wow. So basically, I believe that, you know, Nova Scotia, and thank you for doing the best that you can, but please start asking better of your government because they are letting us all down. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Anne Caverzan.
Good afternoon. My name is Anne Caverzan. I live on West Haver Road in Maters Cove. Before I begin, I would like to acknowledge and commend the mayor and this council for publicly addressing the frustrations in dealing with this provincial government's influence on municipal policies. Good for you. And that leads me to my first point. How can municipalities create and enforce their own bylaws? It almost seems like an exercise in futility. If various ministers or senior heads of provincial departments can, for questionable reasons, overrule municipal bylaws. Kingsburg Building and Boardwalk in a wetland is a case in point, and the recent infilling and rock wall in West Haver Pond in an environmentally sensitive municipal designated area is another. All that being said, I'd like to talk about what we feel is missing from the proposed planning strategy and bylaws pertaining to the local climate action plan. There are no clear, specific regulations and enforcement policies regarding infilling in and around wetlands in Lunenburg County. My immediate concern, of course, is the most recent dumping of gravel and stone into the edge of an environmentally sensitive zone in West Haver Pond. This was done to create an area of flat surface, not there before. The ground sloped from the edge of the road naturally into the wetland. And the Prince's Inlet Secondary Planning Strategy in their Environmental Land Use Strategy, Section 332, states that the environmentally sensitive zone shall be considered a no-build zone, in which no structure shall be permitted. For further clarity, it shall be the policy of Council to prohibit development within the environmentally sensitive zone. It also states in 331, Council recognizes that there is a general lack of municipal mandate to protect the environment from harmful individual activities and acknowledges that this responsibility rests with the applicable senior level government departments. However, municipalities are enabled in various ways, including zoning, to help protect specific environmentally sensitive areas within their jurisdiction. And this leads me to my next point. We have had legal advice that there are several sections in the Municipal Government Act that enable municipalities to enact and enforce policies. The following are the most significant for us. Adoption of land use bylaw or amended. Item 219.1, where a council adopts a municipal planning strategy or a municipal planning strategy amendment that contains policies about regulating land use and development, the council shall at the same time adopt a land use bylaw or amendment that shall enable the policies to be carried out. where a municipal planning strategy so provides, a land use bylaw may, item 225G, a land use bylaw may, in relation to a development, regulate or prohibit the alternating of land levels, the excavation or filling in of land, the placement of fill, or the removal of soil. A land use bylaw may regulate or prohibit excavation, filling in, placement of fill, or reclamation of land on floodplains identified in land use bylaw. A land use bylaw may prohibit development on land that, one, is subject to flooding or subsistence, is low-lying or marshy or unstable. If the council reviews the powers granted to the municipalities in the Municipal Government Act, they could enact the mechanism to enforce it. We are urging you to find the way to make the bylaws clear and strong and to make sure that the municipality enforces those bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Karen Janigan. Pardon?
I have a hard act to follow. Sorry, just one moment. I'm just going to fix the laptop here.
Okay. Can you get rid of this while you're at it?
It's all yours.
Well, good afternoon, evening. It was a pleasure to be here. I want to commend you for taking this on. Like Anne said, it's a difficult area and a task.
Could you please state your name and the community, please, that you live
in? My name's Karen Janigan. I live in Martins River in the Narrows. And I've actually had a front-eyed view of the rising ocean levels. And I don't know if anybody here doesn't believe in climate change, but I'm going to tell you that from what we watch, we see the evidence of climate change. The highest of tides, when we first moved there and finished our house in 2018, the highest of tides used to barely come up to the sign on the wharf. Now it buries it. And during hurricanes, we've had water up to the second story of the boathouse. So we've watched. It's gone on so long that now our ramp is too short. Our wharf is too low. And we have to increase the length of the ramp. We have to increase the wharf. So those are the costs that we're taking on. We were very careful when we built this house. We tried to make sure that we were 30 meters from the water because we knew about climate change. I had covered it as a reporter. I knew about the Brundtland Commission, so I was very well aware. We thought we had a foolproof exit. We thought we were right. But after Hurricane Fiona, we figured that we wouldn't be right, that we'd have to, Hurricane Juan, sorry, we didn't expect the flooding. No, it was Dorian. Excuse me. Yeah. Dorian, we Oakland Road was flooded, and we would have had to have gone by foot through the woods in the escarpment. So Hurricane Dorian was a Category 2 when it arrived. Hurricane Juan was a Category 2 when it arrived as well. It had 2 meters of storm surge and 20-meter waves recorded in Halifax Harbor. 20-meter waves. In 2002, Hurricane Fiona, through the Hurricane Fiona Fund, provided $300 million over 2 years to support local businesses and communities affected, as well as providing money for putting in measures to prevent damage. Ottawa provided $167 million to the Red Cross to help people. So where did all this money from the governments come from? I don't even know how much the municipality district of Lunenburg spent in repairs, which I'm sure was some, but it all comes from the same taxpayer pocket. So it comes from your pocket if you own coastal land, any land. So the rain flood event in 2023 and the wildfires in 2023, both in Nova Scotia and across Canada, it came up to $3.1 billion in losses, in insured losses. So these are things that were insured. And these would also be, as I said, for the wildfires. It's worldwide. In the last 12 months have been the hottest in record around the world. It doesn't mean there are any cold spots, but it does mean that this trend is well established. We cannot put more people at risk than already are. I don't know if any of you trout fish, but you might have noticed that it has been a bust for the last 2 years as well because of either too much rain or no rain at all or no snow. Apparently, we have a distinctive group of Canadian great white sharks. O Search gave a speech about at the MICA annual dinner a couple of weeks ago, and there are at least 100 sharks in our water right now. There are others who are not tagged, and great whites can be found in 30 feet of water, so be careful when you're swimming out to platforms, okay? And don't swim around Tancook Island, I've been told. Not good. Apparently, we also have whales now, and Walter Flower can confirm this. We have humpbacks, we have blue whales,
We're down to 17 seconds if you see on your clocks.
Okay, well, there's Canadian federal money. All I say is we need these regulations. People can't be trusted to not build in places that will get everyone in trouble.
Thank you. Steve McIsaac.
Good afternoon. Everyone, my name is Steve McIsaac. I'm live in Conquerel Mills, and the reason I'm here, I guess, is to try to understand how to implement these regulations as a professional engineer working in this county, because I'm already neck deep in this over the last number of months with people either trying to get in before the first reading or now how we're going to implement it between now and the time frame when it actually becomes fully effective. And this same type of setback and elevation requirement was put in place in Queens County almost 2 years ago. There was a big learning curve trying to understand how to, I guess, operationalize this. And that's primarily where my questions are for council to consider is the next step after this. So to kind of give, I want to give some examples for folks to start thinking about. So like right now, the setback is measured horizontally, right? And that's from what's called the 2013 ordinary high water mark, which can only be established by a Nova Scotia land surveyor. And it's very hard to find and get that type of work scheduled now. They're all really busy. So one of the recommendations I had was for the municipality to implement some benchmarks around the coast that can be referred to, which would save a lot of headaches and effort. The second one is I'm trying to understand how the building office or planning will implement this. When someone shows up with a building permit and they could be 50 meters away from the ocean, but with the slope, it's a horizontal setback. It could be 60 meters. One-to-one slope, you'd be 60 meters back. And I guess that would be triggered with renovations as well as new construction. So we have to be able to decide a way to measure that accurately and what triggers the assessment work. Another couple items are wetland assessments are only allowed to be completed by wetland trained specialists. It's a course you have to take. It can't just be done by anyone to establish those boundaries. There's a lot of confusion as to what is a wetland between environment and folks like myself that are trying to establish the location. It's not just where you have water or grass. There's many different indicators of what is considered a wetland, especially a coastal wetland, because they're more sensitive. And the last item is trying to balance. It was mentioned here. There's provincial regulations for setbacks. There's environment, for instance, allows infilling of wetlands through processes that require compensation back. You're allowed to also infill marine areas through natural resources permitting. So it's kind of like those still exist. And I'm not sure what trumps what. And it's just something I thought staff should be aware of, because we're trying to implement, we will be trying to implement this very quickly. And I just need some clarification on some matters which may not be answered today, but I ask that staff and council try and think of that a little bit so we can make this operational in the upcoming months. Thank you.
Thank you. Lennis Corkum.
My name is Lennis Corkum. Good afternoon to council and fellow members of the public. I concur with the former speakers. Most of you at the table, or a number of you at the table, know my quest for the last 50 years on public access to our natural resources. I am no stranger to failure, but I finally feel that I'm not alone. Thank you very much. We have, and we have almost but destroyed the most wonderful natural resource in Nova Scotia, and that's our rivers, our lakes, and our oceanfront. And I think it's time to stop passing the buck. The buck should stop here. Over the last 50 years, I've been fighting for public access to Nine Mile Lake or Sherbrooke Lake, and I have failed. We have a piece of land, but due to measures beyond my control, we have been blocked in every way, and we now have another 2 years setback, another water study, and whatever, right? But if you take and go around the Nine Mile Lake, there's probably 600 cottages on the waterfront now. My grandfather had a 100-acre grant. That now has 68 to 70 cottages on the waterfront. And I am appalled at what we have done to our natural resources. I don't think that this council has overcome the hurdles, or will overcome the hurdles very easily, as the former speakers have said, but we need to protect what we got. Let's not lose what we have left, and that's naturally happening. A couple of years ago, we usually take a drive around the water, around the shore for once or twice a year, and a couple of years ago, and down in Mader's Cove, and they were putting rocks in the piers for a wharf, and that whole cove was brown. So how does this happen? How does this happen? We have laws, we have rules, and we have regulations. And all they do is go to the Natural Resources, Department of Environment, Department of Fisheries, Council, and they get a permit to do it. So are we here beating our heads against the brick wall again? Council is the people that handles the building permits out to people. I question a lot that was done in Caribou Lake, because I knew the guy that done the design for the septic system. And I said, wasn't there anything said? No. He said, I asked the same question to the landowner. He said, I went down to the municipality, and I got a permit. I could have put my house in the water. How does this happen? How does this happen? I'm just appalled at somebody saying like that. He's a domestic engineer, and he knows better than that. So what I'm asking here right now is, are we beating our head against another wall? Because we have rules in forestry that we stay 30 meters back from any watercourse over a meter wide. That's not very big, right? But when we come to the lakes and the rivers and the ocean, what happens to those rules and regulations? What happens to that? I asked that question before in Blockhouse, and well, that's a different thing. But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. So are we again going to make rules and regulations and laws that they come down to the environment, they come to the municipality, and they can admit to do whatever they want? That's my question. Is this going to happen all over again? And eventually, we're not going to have anything protect. And I don't think that should happen. And like I told this council one time before, when we had it placed on the Lehave River, you have the key to turn the ignition. Please take advantage of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah Stevens.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. My name is Sarah Stevens. I'm from West Havers Lane area, Maeder's Cove in Lunenburg County. I think we're hearing a lot of the same sort of concerns from residents of Lunenburg County. The new coastal protection plan for the municipality of District of Lunenburg, as proposed, will include secondary planning strategy and land use bylaws for the Princess Inlet and area, and under Section 3.3 in the Environmental Land Use Act, that area of environmentally sensitive land surrounding the West Havers Pond, I hope, will still remain as an area of special significance and an area to be protected. I think, like so many wetlands in the Lunenburg area and special coastlines, it's really important that the municipality continue to protect these areas. The wetlands of special significance have special significance environmentally. They're much more greatly efficient at carbon sequestration. They are much more efficient at that than forests. We know that a critical support for nature, multiple bird and wildlife species, and a variety of plant lives that are in these areas support a healthy environment. And with great respect to my previous speaker, there is an enormous loss of wetland, coastland, and healthy environment in Nova Scotia. I think that you're in a unique position as a council to take leadership in the province and stress that this Planning and Protection Act should not be development versus wetland and coastal protection, but working in unison. I think that the concerns that have been addressed repeatedly reflect a stepping back of the provincial legislation, and your bylaws defer the enforcement of infractions to those bodies. So, with respect to Ms. Caversan's comments earlier, I think extra protection with enforceable bylaws at the municipal level would be a tremendously good step in protecting wetlands, protecting coastlands, and protecting Lunenburg County. And then perhaps as an example to other municipalities, we can move forward and protect the significant parts of our province that are being so greatly eroded. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. We have Philip Williams.
Good evening, Council, Your Honor the Mayor, and the guests we have with us tonight. I'm sitting with my back to these folks, so I'm going to be careful what I say, but let's move forward. My name is Philip Williams. I live at 211 Pearl Street in Wildville. No, I am not a coastal property owner. I've been watching the proceedings with the proposed land use bylaw. particularly the coastal protection, with some interest. My interest was especially piqued when I realized it was a foundational document that will be used for the development of a countywide implementation of further zoning and land use restrictions. I choose the word restriction because on further examination of the proposed act we have before us, I don't see protection of the coast. What I am seeing are regulations and requirements that ultimately allow for coastal development, but a much higher cost to the landowner. As I stated in the LaHave public information session, I view the act in its present format should more aptly be called the Restriction of Development Act, which only serves to increase the cost of development at the expense of the present landowners. Development that might only be possible done after engineering surveys, infilling, armoring, or other allowable undertakings, again, designed to increase the cost of development. What does this mean for the current coastal property owners that may have received their property after having been in their family for generations, or people that have saved their entire lives to purchase property with the hope of developing it for retirement? Will they be forced off their land because of the potentially massive increase of cost of developing their property that they now may need to sell at a loss? For what? Preparation for hypothetical computer modeling of massive increases of sea level rise? You, as counsel for MODL, have a tremendous amount to consider with implementation of this bylaw. You are good people serving as part-time counselors with no personal staff or budget to do your own independent research. You are at the mercy of well-meaning, hard-working staff that have a singular perspective on the topic of climate change that, as we know, if we look beyond the CBC or global talking points that are so dutifully repeated, there is not consensus on what future climate looks like or how it will affect us. Let me be clear. Is climate change real? Of course it is. Nobody, even with the slightest ability to formulate a cohesive thought, denies that climate change is real. The question is, how much is it changing, how quickly, and why? The science is not settled. The IPCC, whose information much of this planning is developed around, historically has not shown it can accurately predict future climate targets and frequently revises its predictions when it is proven wrong. Are you willing to risk the potential future litigation brought by property owners adversely affected by this act that we as taxpayers ultimately will need to pay for? You as counsel have a legal, fiduciary responsibility to adequately analyze all the information widely available, information not necessarily presented to you by staff, some of which offers a counter-narrative to the suggested coming disasters. Lastly, as I stated previously, I am not a coastal property owner. Who am I to impose my views on the people that are mostly directly affected by this? I propose you place on hold implementation of the Act until you have had time to look at the information available. You have the time. Other municipalities, some of which have not even started the process, are taking a slower, more methodical approach. I would also propose you give the decision to the actual property owners themselves. Leah Zink, the returning officer for MODL, has proposed and you approved of online digital voting for the upcoming municipal election in October. She indicated the cost saving would justify such a move. Surely MODL has the ability to find all the coastal property owners affected and have them decide democratically at minimal cost through, let's call it, digital direct democracy. Let's see if this bylaw is even wanted by the people who are most affected by it. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Thank you.
Are we going to take the break now?
Okay. Andrew Himmelman. Could you come up to the mic, please? There will be more time allocated at the end for anyone who needs additional time. If time permits.
Yeah, I was talking outside and I was going to ask at the end if I could increase the time frame from the shortened 5 minutes to the regular 10 minutes, but I'll read as much as I can, as fast as I can. Thank you. Can you hear me? Good evening, Mayor, members of council, staff, and public that's gathered for this public hearing. My name is Andrew Himmelman. My family and I live in Newcombville, District 4. I'd like to state we only have one ocean, one shoreline, and only one chance to help prevent damage for future generations. But this has to be achieved properly and not, well, at least it's a start. Because it's not a start if we're going to go backwards right from the beginning. I'd like to start off by letting the general public here know that I've attended almost every council meeting over the past 3 months where this MPS has been talked about. I've also attended every public info session other than Tan Cook Island, and I have also had a meeting with Modal CAO about how this document was prepared, what info and data was used, and as well how it has been presented to the public. Now, I have several concerns that I'm going to touch on here tonight, but I want to start with questions commonly asked by the public. Most of these great questions were not posted on the Frequently Asked Questions Modal page, nor posted with the answers to maybe help the next group. But here's what I took away as being the main concerns of landowners. What is going to happen to my property value? Is my insurance going to go up once you deem my land at risk? How much is this extra surveyor and erosion assessment going to cost? Why are you doing this? Is this going to affect inland rivers and lakes? How are you going to enforce this? How are you staffed for all these extra development permits? Have you looked into the legal side of this in case members of the public want to litigate or sue Modal? Can you ensure my insurance rate is going to be unaffected? Now, Reed, planning director, addressed these questions publicly, but mostly walked around some of the questions with open-ended answers. My concerns right from the beginning were how the people have been consulted, how this document is going to be used, and the actual data packed inside, and how does this actually protect the environment? We are, of course, Canada's ocean's playground, and we must protect this for future generations. Modal has said they did a survey where 206 property owners responded. They also claim 240 residents attended 7 open houses, and they also claim only 111 vacant properties will be affected by this MPS. But this is simply not true, and a slip of evidence by staff to hide the truth. I've got correspondence from Reed that in reality, the true number of properties being affected is 4,488. Council was never publicly told this during any public staff presentations, public events, and I imagine they still do not know the truth right now. Why have you not contacted these property owners? Why has there not been a mail out or phone calls? You do not miss mailing out the property tax bills now, do you? All 4,488 properties will be affected in one way or the other, because if you want to modify your existing house, you will have to build. You will have new building rules and will ultimately be affected. I'd like to know how many current standing structures will be affected by this, because when I use a Modal Coastal Protection ArcGIS mapping tool and turn on the 3.97 meter flood mapping layer, I find that just between Dublin Shore and Crescent Beach and the islands, there are well over 100 homes affected just in that little area. That doesn't even include vacant lots where you could potentially build on. The data has obviously been manipulated for plausible deniability, and the number of actual homes and properties that will be affected is much larger, certainly not 111. Now, May 14th, during first reading, Deputy Mayor Wendy Oikle asked the property owners if they were personally notified of the implications so they can voice their opinions and thoughts. Now, that was on the low numbers that were given by council, or to council by staff during the first reading presentation, roughly 40 to 50 properties, and that was just a month ago. If there are hundreds or even thousands of properties that this will affect, why hasn't Modal contacted these owners and at least have a discussion? 206 property owners you did have a survey with, were they told they can't put a piece on their house unless it's on the back side?
30 seconds.
Were they told the setback numbers so they can't build on their vacant lots? The consultation process here has been expedited, and you have not properly contacted nor informed all affected landowners under this new MPS. How it is explained to me by the CAO is that this is a MPS or a municipal planning strategy, and it's a foundational document that bylaws are going to be created from across the municipality.
And again, if time permits at the end of the evening, there will be opportunity for people to speak again.
Thank you. That's just the beginning.
We are now going to take a 5-minute break and resume at 5:05.